Welcome to the David McQueen Show, a weekly podcast where through insights and interviews, I explore what good leadership looks like. My main aim is to keep the podcast long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to create interest and without those annoying adverts. So sit back and enjoy this episode of the David McQueen Show. In September 2016, the Washington Post ran an article called White House Women Want to Be in the Room Where It Happens. And the opening line, it reads as follows. When President Obama took office, two-thirds of his top aides were men. Women complained of having to elbow their way into important meetings. And when they got in, their voices were sometimes ignored. So female staffers adopted a meeting strategy called amplification. When a woman made a key point, other women would repeat it, and also would give credit to its author. This forced the men in the room to recognize the contribution and denied them the chance to claim the idea as their own. We just started doing it and made a purpose of doing it, as it was an everyday thing, said one former Obama aide, who requested anonymity to speak to the newspaper. Obama noticed she and others said, and began calling more often on women and junior aides to speak out. I personally recently heard of this method of application whilst chairing a conference on diversity and inclusion in technology a few weeks back. One of the speakers mentioned that her team went out of their way to highlight the same thing, amplicating the voices of women who historically had been closed down in meetings in that organization. So in today's podcast, I want to talk about the role of leaders in chairing meetings, not just to address the equality of voices that need to be heard, like I gave in those examples around women, but to ensure that all who do attend know that they are part of something that is worthwhile. Not only do they have equality, but there's also equity. And when people go to a meeting, knowing that they are not wasting their time hearing someone just drone on and on about something, but they can see value in the said meeting. In essence, I want to talk about how not to make your meeting suck. Now, my role as a facilitator, and when I work with high level executive teams, or even if I am chairing away days or board meetings, is that managing a meeting is not an easy task. Some people, like speaking or presenting or any other roles which may not be in their main domain, think it's very, very simple. But I think it's important to clarify a number of things first. Meetings should be a source of empowerment or reflection on the organization, and ultimately, every meeting that you have in the business should align with organizational goals, strategies, and visions. Otherwise, what's the point of having them? The second thing is that the best meetings that we go to are well-planned and thought through. So before I even talk about how to run a meeting and make sure that it doesn't suck, let's actually explore why as a leader, or just why as a team member, why it's important to have a team meeting. Are they just an opportunity for people to just sit around and just talk? Or is it a vital function of the organization you work for? So here are a couple of reasons why I think that team meetings are really good. Firstly, I think it provides us with a safe environment. For example, when I am hosting or facilitating those high-level meetings, one of the essential things that comes out is the Chatham House rule. So whatever we talk about within that meeting doesn't get shared outside. You make sure that it stays, that the confidentiality of the individuals who have shared or been open, it stays there. So we provide a safe environment for colleagues to be able to speak. Second one is that it can really play a vital role in leadership. If you're a team leader, a division leader, or even if you're one of the senior leaders, a meeting can be an incredible opportunity to be able to rally the troops, to make sure everybody feels that they are part of the team. And yes, you can send out emails and newsletters and all the rest of it, but being in a specific meeting or in a room where a leader, be it divisional or of your whole organization, is talking about where the organization is going can be totally empowering. Team meetings, they provide connectedness. You can get, especially in times of change, you can realize that you're just not this remote person. Yes, there are remote meetings that can be had by conference calls and what have you, but when you are close with people, you feel part and parcel of a movement. And that intimacy, especially in face-to-face meetings, you just cannot replace it. They are great places of being able to provide supportive relationships, because there are times where individuals may have an issue that they want to be able to raise. And often by being able to have a meeting and having colleagues and individuals around you, you can provide that support, whether it's in your department, whether you are trying to get an idea out. Being able to have more than one person back you up, provide that support in a meeting, is actually quite empowering, and it allows you to be able to stand up and say what it is that you want to say, obviously if you're given the opportunity. In last week's episode, I talk about imposter syndrome, and I think one of the ways of being able to tackle imposter syndrome is being able to have that platform where you can demonstrate where you know what you're talking about, rather than having to recoil into a space because you don't think you have the voice to say or give your opinion. They are also great to understand about some of the challenges that we have. So meetings are a place where people can raise concerns. There may be fears, there may be troubles, there may be concerns that individuals have. And being in a meeting, and I'll go through in a moment the different types of meetings that you can have, but being in a meeting can be a great opportunity to learn, even if you're not raising it yourself. It's learning, because sometimes there may be individuals in our teams who are going through stress, who are going through some serious issues of confidence, or maybe not even feeling aligned with other members of the team. And having a meeting gives an opportunity for those points to be raised. It's also a great place to get feedback. I love feedback. I usually go with a model of feedback, what I call the win model. But I also realize that sometimes there's going to be feedback that needs to be really direct. There needs to be, and obviously being pitched at the right level, sometimes there has to be an opportunity to freely speak, and not to attack a person, but rather to be able to address a specific problem. Team meetings can also be really good learning opportunities where you find out about yourself, find out how other people work, find out your communication skills. And again, there are ways and means of recognizing that being in a meeting can just lift you out of the day-to-day operations that you do. There can be the temptation to be so stuck in the specific work that you are taking part of that you don't raise your head up and see how other members of the organization or even other members of your department are contributing to the overall vision. Being in a meeting often allows you to be able to see or explore how your role affects others in the organization and how you are impacted by others as well. So there are many reasons. Sometimes people don't like the fact that they have to be able to break away from their desk to go to a meeting, but I think it's an important way as people to be able to connect. Yes, you can do it via video, depending on the location of the organization, but there is something incredibly powerful, whether it's around a conference, an away day, a teaming, whatever it is, for individuals in an organization to be able to come together. So let's explore the different kinds of meetings that there are. I have about six here, maybe more, but let's just work with these ones. At the top of my list, I've got the decision-making ones. So in any organization, a lot of really important decisions are made in meetings, whether that's a senior leadership team, whether it's a team leadership team, you've come together as a group or a division. There are important decisions that are going to be made in a meeting. And that process can include information gathering from individuals. You might be brainstorming. You might be looking. You might be voting. And there are tools. I've discovered some amazing tools where people can go into a meeting and then they can vote anonymously on issues without having to, as it were, speak out and get feel that because of the decision that they've made, it may affect their actual role. So decision making is number one. A second one is around problem solving. And in any given organization, there are going to be varied issues that need to be solved. Some are going to be very complex, some are going to be quite simple. But being able to come together for a meeting to solve some problems, it may be around personalities, it might be around processes, It might be around the way that your company or organization markets itself, or funding, whatever it is. Being able to focus on creating great strategies and plans to navigate the future or the present is another good reason to have a meeting. I don't think they should have to actually happen too often. So, for example, I love, especially when I've been in, when I ran projects, being able to have some problem solving ones either at the beginning or somewhere through the middle of the actual project has been really helpful, because it's allowed other people to be able to create massive input as to how to take that project going forward. A third one is innovation meetings, where people are just being really creative. You've got an idea, you've seen an opportunity in the market, or you've seen an opportunity within the organization itself to be able to do things slightly better. You imagine there are organizations who would have thought about the way that they communicated. I remember when I first started working, we had telex machines. Yes, telex and fax machines. Telex machines, my God. And now we are we have moved through that to have things like emails and web conferencing and instant messaging groups using Slack and Facebook or whatever tools are available. And part of those have come about by organizations being innovative, whether internally or externally, trying to find a way of doing things better, trying to find a way of improving the actual processes and innovating to broaden the scope of what it is you actually do. The fourth meeting, or the fourth type of meeting, I think it's important, is around a team building meeting. And these can include things like, I don't know, kickoff meetings to start a specific strategic year. It could be corporate events where you have conferences and people come together. You can have away days. It could be a board meeting where board members are coming together to obviously build those specific teams. It could be any combination of those things that I've mentioned before. But the important part of this team building is making sure that all participants feel like they're essential part of the organization, whether it's a unit, whether it's a team, a department, whatever. But just making sure that those individuals feel that they have an impact in there. And one of the things I always say is, when you are doing a team meeting, make sure that you are really getting the involvement of those individuals that want to be part of the team. Too often, I've seen organizations bring me in and they've wanted to do these incredible team away days and these team building events, but they haven't even remotely consulted those in the team who aren't in positions of leadership. And so they get individuals who will come along reluctantly to be part of this, but they don't necessarily feel that they've had input. So for me, if you are going to do a team building meeting, make sure you get as much input as possible into not just the delivery, but the shaping of the actual program as well. A fifth kind of meeting is an information sharing meeting. So you may have a new product or a little bit of information, and you may pull together a panel, or you may deliver a lecture or a presentation about this new bit of information or an update. And the primary goal of this meeting, obviously, is for the speaker or the presenter to share as much information as possible around these new ways of working, new products, new techniques. It's not as interactive as others, but it does give an opportunity as well for things at the end, like Q&A, where people may want to have a bit more information about that presentation. But information meetings are just as valuable. And the sixth one, or the final one I'm going to include here, is around status updates. So obviously, if you run a regular team or a project meeting, it might be that Monday morning meeting where you go back and look at figures. You may address new things that may have changed. But the whole idea is that the meetings like this is just to align the team on any challenges, progresses, or any next steps that you need to make in that process. And what you will notice is that I purposely left the status update meeting till the last. And because this tends to be the most common one, and it tends to be the one that a lot of people don't really like to go to either. Why would I have to go to a progress meeting all the time? And it's one of many, it's one of six. But I actually do believe that all the ones I mentioned above, they don't, although there may be primary reasons for a meeting, they probably are elements of all the kinds of meetings that you will have. You can have innovation or team building or presenting and problem solving in most meetings. But the reason why I purposely identified them separately was just to allow leaders to be more succinct about what kind of meeting they really want to be focused on. Because if you're more succinct about it, the more you're able to sell it in, the more you're able to get buy-in, and the more you're willing to be able to shape a specific agenda around it. So in any given meeting, as a leader, your role is to shape the direction. And sometimes it can be an easy path, but often as well, sometimes those meetings can be really difficult and they can be quite uncomfortable. But your role as a leader is to be able to shape the direction that it actually goes in. Whether you are a youth worker in Lincolnshire, whether you are a health worker working for the NHS up in Bradford, whether you are running a media company in central London, whether you are running an advertising company or in Bournemouth, it's important for you to recognize that as a leader, you shape the direction that that meeting goes. But what I've found, and I found this a lot in my travels, is that in many instances, people who are chairing and leading meetings have never been trained or coached or mentored in how to do this properly. And to be fair, I only really started to understand how good business meetings can be run when I actually started to run my own business. And I had to learn that along the way. And to be fair, I'm still learning. But I think it's important to be able to share as best as I can for those individuals who haven't got the opportunity or aren't aware of how to run a meeting that doesn't suck, to be able to share this kind of information over the platform of a podcast, so that, you know, there's no excuse then. Now you know you can do better. So let's share some really basic essentials that all leaders should know about running a meeting. And I'm going to give you really 8 good points. So write these down, please. If you're driving, obviously, you can't write. If you're listening while you're walking, you know, take your time and come back and revisit them at some time. But here are 8 points I think should be really essential to any good meeting. Doesn't matter what definition they are, or the ones that I gave above, or even if it's a combo, here are some things, and it doesn't have to be all 8, but it's a bit of a guideline. So let's go with number 1. Firstly, I think you need to define the scope. Why are you actually having the meeting? You know, is it actually necessary? I remember working for as a consultant for a uni a number of years ago, and they used to have so many meetings. They used to have meetings for meetings. And anybody who's worked in higher education, you probably know what I'm talking about. They used to have all these meetings. You just get pulled away from your desk just to have a meeting on top of a meeting. And I remember I came in as a consultant, and I looked at my diary, and I probably had about 6 or 7 meetings and these subcommittee meetings with these individuals. And I went to all of them and I sat down after the first one and I just said, look, in my role, I'm going to scrap this. We're going to have 2 meetings. We're going to have the strategic one and then we'll have an update, but I'm not going to all these meetings. And it caused a stir, and I got myself in a bit of trouble, probably why they didn't want to renew my contract afterwards. But I just didn't feel it was necessary to have as many meetings. And to be fair, as a result of being able to do that, we were really focused on getting the job done, being able to solve problems, and our project came ahead of schedule. So being able to understand why you're having the meeting is important. Is it necessary? And again, as I said, when I mentioned those 6 meetings before, what type of meeting is it? What is the scope that we want to do in defining this meeting? The second role is to build an agenda. This may sound obvious, but there are lots of people who don't do meeting agendas. They don't talk about the length, how long is the meeting going to be, what are the roles we're going to play in the meeting. So for example, the smaller the meeting is, it's really simple, but the larger the meeting is, who's going to chair the meeting? Who's going to make sure that they identify all the individuals that need to come into the meeting? Who's going to facilitate it whilst the conversations are being had? Who's going to take notes and record and make sure that timings are kept? When I build an agenda, I don't put, as a rule of thumb, I don't put AOB or any other business on my agenda. For me, if there's information that needs to be had before the meeting, you feed it into the meeting. If you don't make it before the time the agenda's done, it just has to wait till the next one. That may seem a bit harsh, but for me, it helps to focus the mind and it stops you getting dragged aside by any other issues. So if there are issues that don't hit it when the agenda gets sent out, then unless you're going to call an extraordinary meeting, for me, I just don't like AOB. But other people do it differently, and it depends on the size, the scope, and the shape of your organization. The third bit is to make sure you send invites. So ensure you have a venue. When you send out the invites, have a confirmation process, whether that's read receipts or the nature of the actual the invite making, you know, there's so many great tools now where you can send and you have calendar invites, and people, when they receive these invites, they can confirm by clicking on it in a calendar, or you get read receipts, as I say, or it gets responded back to you. But I also think when you are sending invites, this is one thing that's so important. You have to be ruthless with your invite list. Sometimes people just love to go to meeting for meeting's sake. But if you can't clearly verbalize why someone should be in a meeting, then they don't need to be in it. And it's not about massaging egos and making people feel really good. But what's the point of somebody just coming to a meeting, a specific meeting where you want a level of involvement? And again, this is slightly different from presentation meetings or what have you. But why should somebody be there if they need not be in it? If they don't need to be there, don't invite them. It's not just about making up numbers. It's about making sure that, again, as I said at the beginning, it aligns with your strategic vision and making sure people are there for a reason. Number four, manage the space. And this is really important. I've been to so many meetings. I've hosted meetings myself where things like flip charts and AV and all that kind of stuff have been left down to the last minute, even refreshments, even writing pads. Managing that space is important because if you can manage the actual environment, it allows the meeting to be able to run a lot more smoothly. You're not worrying and running about making sure that this technology or this piece of paper isn't working. And one of the things I will always say as well, if you are running an in-house meeting and you are using technology, don't be afraid to have papers and flip charts, because if that technology fails, just go and use the flip charts. It's all good. Number five, set the tone. So when you're in that meeting, and you're at the start of the meeting and everybody's in there after having received your invite, knowing what the agenda is and the scope of the actual meeting, set the tone. Maybe you reflect on the last meeting and how you want to improve on it, or some observations from the last one. You share the agenda. Again, just being able to make sure that everybody has a copy of that, and even if not, just being able to quickly run through it at the beginning. Set up some ground rules as well, I think, around respect. Making sure that, you know, you may have a meeting where you ban the use of mobile phones or checking messages. I've seen that work quite effectively. And also making sure that there are specific, if people want to know their roles, so if you've got a chairperson, a note taker, or whatever, there are specific roles that may be aligned or assigned in that meeting as well. Preferably be done before, but just letting people be aware of who they are. Number six, run to the agenda. Too many meetings run over time because they're not managed well. So be mindful of that time management. Sometimes meetings may not run as planned, but at least if you've got an agenda, you can try and run as best to it. And making sure that you efficiently take notes that will run to that specific agenda as well. Number seven, know how to close the meeting. So whether you give a verbal summary at the end, you want to talk about the outcomes, make sure that people are aware of any notes or minutes that have been taken. But close that meeting in the same strength in the way that you would have started when you set the tone at the beginning. Start strong and finish strong. And then lastly, it's just about being able to follow up. Make sure that anything that you've promised in the meeting, whether it's notes or minutes or reports that you're going to have up, that you give those to the attendees. And without being too formulaic, these work and they work really well. So let's get to the crunch of this now. The biggest challenge of any meeting tends not to be so much the content, let's be honest, but managing egos. I'll say that again. The biggest challenge of any meeting tends not to be so much the content, but managing the egos of people who are in that room, including those of us who chair those meetings or lead those meetings. And many leaders are afraid of conflict because they only see one end of the scale. They see it as a big fight, as opposed to creating a space for difference and debate. Managing people is the essential part of being able to deal with a meeting. Yes, we can get all the information out, but it is about managing people. So let's address some of the key roles as a leader that you have to face if you want to be able to run a meeting that doesn't suck. Number one, active listening. Make sure that you are listening to individuals and not just listening to respond. There is a temptation that when somebody speaks, especially if you know you might, let's be honest, for everybody who's listening to this, many of us work with people who are complete assholes. Let's be honest. Actually, let's be even more honest. Sometimes we are the complete asshole. We are the person who's the problem. But active listening is about being able to take that step back and listen to other people's points of view. Understand that people are going to be coming from a different space than we are. And being able to feed back to them rather than making assumptions, trying to understand where they're actually coming from. Which leads me to my second point. Be impartial. So try to seek out the facts and judge the arguments equally and fairly, instead of trying to go for the individuals. We all have implicit biases, or what's known as implicit social cognition, where our attitudes, our stereotypes, our understanding, or even our actions are shaped by unconscious beliefs or unconscious biases. And it's difficult to be impartial, but it comes with practice. It is a learned habit about being able to sit back when we are leading these meetings and saying to individuals, or being able to make notes around what people say, and treating them fairly and treating them impartial, rather than bringing in our biases and preferences into the meeting. Which leads me to our third point about being assertive. It's important to hold your own. And the difference between, sometimes people get this, the confusion between assertive and aggressive. Aggressive is shouting people down, or passive aggressive when you do it really silently, but you're quite menacing, like you're threatening people, like, I know where you live and I will take you out, you and your family. Assertive is more about being, holding your own, but being firm and allowing people to attack or address points, but not attacking people. Even if you disagree with a person, it's important to deal with the point, but not the person. That's the difference. Aggressive people attack people. Assertive people, they go and attack the points that are being made, but they do so in a firm and fair manner. And the last point of being a leader or chairperson for a meeting is being adaptable. Make sure that you recognize that sometimes times may run over. You might have to manage comments in a different way, and you have to deal with different personality types. When I do communication training, I talk about the fact that you are going to be dealing, how do you respond to somebody who's being passive-aggressive or passive or aggressive or assertive? How do you deal with those different communication or personality types? There are ways and means, and this training obviously not in the scope of this podcast, but there are ways and means of being able to understand how to deal with different people. And having that adaptability is a strong sign of good leadership. So let's jump quickly to managing conflict, because I mentioned this point here and I mentioned that people don't like to deal with it. So I'm going to share some quick points as to how you can manage conflict, whether that's in a small scale meeting, whether you're managing a panel or a team meeting, whatever it is, and a away day. Here's some quick ways that you can do it. I think first and foremost, if you are a leader, you have to clarify what the disagreement is, because often sometimes people can get really upset not realizing that they are actually agreeing on a point, but they can be arguing about something just because there's a conflict of personalities. So what you want to do is you want to obtain as much information as possible from each side, asking questions, asking power questions, as I say, until you're certain that everybody understands the issue. Once you've done that, then you establish a common goal. So in this part of the process, you realize that we want to have a desired outcome. So although we may have a difference, we are moving toward a specific desired outcome that aligns with the company's vision, organization's vision and strategy. So what would both sides like to be able to achieve in being able to get to that goal? Putting aside your ego, what you want to get. And then we can start to discuss ways to meet the common goal. Obviously, during this process, we're going to be able to identify or determine what the barriers are. So sometimes it can be that someone believes that there are going to be problems along the way, whether it's around personality, whether it's around process. And we have to, as leaders, define what can or cannot be changed about the situation. Sometimes you've got to put a line in the sand and say, this is acceptable, or this is going to be done, or this is not going to be done. And then what we do is we agree on the best way to resolve the conflict. So both parties need to come to a conclusion on what the best resolution is. And if we're leading that, sometimes it might be forcing the hand of another person to get them to see things not just in their own way or not through their blinkered view, but being able to say, look, we need to identify this. Sometimes we're just so focused on just fixing the problem. Let's identify what the bigger picture is here. And then what we do is we acknowledge the agreed solution. Often individuals, when they are in conflict, it can be just about emotion. It can be about being very upset because it's going to be very personal to them. And so managing that conflict is an essential part of being able to shape that meeting. You know, I've been to team meetings where people have absolutely lost their shit over something, pardon my language, and being able to pull it back in and say, okay, let's strip this back. And I understand exactly where you're coming from. I understand your concern. Let's raise all what those concerns are and let's put it out there. Fine. Let's strip it back without the emotion and put it there. We identify what all those things are, and then we hear the other voice. So we say, right, this is how you're looking at it from two different points of view, but here's our overall vision as an organization. How do you think that your point of view and your point of view over here will align to that big vision? And then we start to explore what those things are and moving it towards an overall consensus. Here's the truth. You're not always going to end up happy. You're not always going to end up with everybody feeling this is the greatest solution, but it is about managing that conflict in the moment. So let me finish on this last point, and I know I've been speaking about this for a while, but I think it's so important. It's a technical part of being able to be part of a leader, but it's so important to do this. The last point I want to talk about is sticking to the agenda. If you know there's lots to go through, okay, preferably it's not good to overstack an agenda with items because people just cannot retain it. I think it's important to realistically have about, maybe depending on your organization, have about three or four key areas. Yes, you may have some sub areas, but about three or four key areas that you can really, really work through. Try not to overstack the actual meeting agenda. Also, it's about managing the environment, making sure that when you are in that room, you're saying to individuals, okay, I know there are some key points here and we could argue this for a while, but let's bring it back in because we've got a time that we're going to be able to stick to. And it might even mean that those who are chairing the meeting, that you pick up some of the points that people may have or concerns that people may have way before the meeting. So rather than bring it up as something fresh and new in the meeting, you could just say, right, having spoken to some people, I've identified that this may be a problem. You build that into the agenda, you build that into some of the points you've made. So rather than having a long extended discussion about a point that people just want to vent on, what you do is you address the problem and the solution, create a debate around it if necessary, but make sure you've identified those even before we've got to the meeting. I mentioned before, make sure that you involve people. We spoke about the amplification at the beginning of the podcast, making sure that those voices that aren't usually heard, whether it's an underrepresented demographic, be that around a woman or an ethnicity, it might be around a class, it might be around orientation, whatever it is in that meeting, it might be just around somebody who's quite passive. How do we amplify that voice so that person or persons feel involved in the process? I mentioned about the team building when you are doing away days and team building, are you making sure that as many voices are heard when you're shaping and designing that program as is possible? So listen, meetings are an essential part on delivering an organizational vision, as well as bringing team players together. Too often people don't run meetings properly. Meetings do suck because they don't understand the mechanics behind it. There is an art and there is a science. The science is about being able to make sure that you have all the information before, that you are aware of the structure of how that meeting should be put together. As I mentioned, when you're setting that agenda, setting the scope, identifying what kind of meeting is. The art is where we go in and we manage people, where we work with each other, where we manage those emotions and we are really improving on our interpersonal skills. But it is important that we recognize how essential meetings are to getting things done. And what I mean by that, we raise issues around decisions, around strategy, around problems, and we say, right, going forward from the meeting, our next stage is to be able to get that stuff done so that when we come back for our next meeting, we'll be able to reflect on it and know what has been done in moving the organization forward. I hope that has been helpful. I've been a bit heavy today, but I hope it has been helpful. And I thank you for listening to this week's episode. And I hope that these tips or pointers have helped someone who's listening in their leadership, or someone who's thinking about being a future leader. And again, even if it's not necessarily something that ticks your box, then being able to recommend that to somebody who's leading you or who's in their charge, getting them to listen and understand how they can help it, whether it's in their school, whether it's in their local government organization, whether it's in a business or nonprofit, whatever it is, being able to share that with them. And it's been, again, a real pleasure to be able to share these insights with you. And in next week's episode, I'm going to be exploring one of my favorite topics, and that is the power of storytelling for leaders. So thank you for listening. And again, as I always say, whether you're listening to it on SoundCloud or on iTunes, or you got this directly from one of the platforms on social media, go ahead and share and comment and rate. And I appreciate both your time to listen and your constant feedback, the emails I get, the feedback on social media. And I look forward to having you tune into the next episode of The David McQueen Show. Until then, all the best. Take care.